fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Hey guys, I am Caleb Giddings, and you are watching or most likely listening to Gunday Brunch, probably on Apple Podcasts, at least based on my demographic data. And if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, go ahead and leave us a 5-star review and a positive rating where you type some words into that, because as I've said every week, and I'm going to keep saying, currently Apple Podcasts and Spotify are two of very few social platforms that are not actively crushing gun-related content. So those reviews and ratings do actually help. Lastly, the Gunday Brunch is brought to you by Taurus USA and Bleecker Street Publications. If you like guns, buy them from Taurus. And if you like reading about guns, go read about them on the Bleecker Street family of publications. Now, if you are watching this, you may have noticed right now that Keith is not with me. I am recording this episode in advance for the first time in a while, because when this comes out next week, I'm going to be in Disney World, which is going to be a first for me. So joining me instead of Keith, we have Brian Eastridge of American Fight and Revolver. Brian, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and AFR?
Well, let's see. I'm a old mill vet. Got out in 02. Was a cop for about 21 and some change years. Had a podcast, the Off Duty On Duty podcast. I had EDC Belt Company, still own that company, maker of concealed carry belts, which Caleb is, you've been the lucky recipient of one of the very limited edition black multicam ones.
I am wearing that belt right now, actually. It is supporting a 327 revolver, a 32 mag revolver on my belt as well. So,
but I had that, and then Daryl Bulkey and I started American Fighting Revolver at the end of 2023, and we got nuked off of every platform imaginable. So we landed with our own website and do gun reviews, consulting. I think we've been to almost all the revolver manufacturers that do any kind of volume. We've done work with them, their marketing teams, their media team, all that fun stuff. Teach a little bit. We have the big event this year is Revolver Fest. We founded that in 2024. And oh, by the way, there's only 14 seats to 180 seat event left. So
holy cow. And that's what, revolverfest.com, where people can sign up for that?
Yeah. And the sign up link actually drives you back to AmericanFightingRevolver.com's shop link. But the information's there. It's just a landing page. A little about the instructors is on there, and that event will be in Clinton, South Carolina, like your backyard, October 10, 11, 12 this year. And we may add another instructor, but we added Chauncey Wisner. If you guys follow State Line Shootist, he is like, you know, if Elmer Keith and Skeeter Skelton kind of,
like reincarnated and merged personalities. Yeah, but where if you got Chauncey out there, what are you gonna, where are we gonna get a 1,000-yard range for him to hip shoot a single action on?
Well, fortunately, right next to the pavilion, so you were kind of across from it. Well, right next to it is a 300-yard steel range.
And that'll be fun. Is he gonna teach long range handgunning? Because that's gonna be fucking cool.
Yes.
That's awesome.
And so that'll be like a single action, double action, whatever you want to bring. And he's just going to put on school for there for a couple of hours. And With it being right next to the pavilion, that'll keep those guys with the PRS rifles and the gigantic muzzle brakes away from our vendor area,
That
which
will
was
be
kind of an
nice.
issue last year, but
Yeah. So if you guys, so if you're out there listening and you don't know what Revolver Fest is, so it is 3 days. You have a demo day on day one where you, as a student, you can sign up for that and you can come out and you can shoot cool guns from companies that make revolvers. So Taurus was there. You know, I obviously Taurus was there because I was there. Smith was there. Colt was there. Was Ruger there? I don't actually
Ruger was
remember.
there.
Ruger was there. I know Diamondback was there with their little SDR thingy,
Yes.
whatever, which is actually a kind of a cool little gun. Like, I, you know, does it look like my initial thought when I first saw it was like, we have a Kimber at home, but it's actually really good. Like, it doesn't suck.
It doesn't. And they are, they've been a real pleasure to work with. I mean, and, a lot of companies. It varies, right? Like some of them are interested in your input. Some of them are just, we got marketing budget we want to spend. So it runs the gamut. But they're a really small company, and guns are not like the big overall thing of their company. Like they do airboats and bass boats and a lot of outdoor equipment style stuff. And the guns is just kind of a follow-on to that. And when they jumped into the revolver world, they did a really good job, and they're very motivated to try to up their presence in that world. And because they're not inexpensive,
No.
and I think a lot of our the guys that show up to Revolver Fest, the bulk of that crowd is pretty. Like propeller headed about revolvers, and they looked at that thing
Putting it
like,
nicely.
yeah, they're like, what is this newfangled velocipede? And then they went to the bay, and they're like, oh, these are actually pretty cool. So, and then our big title sponsor is Lipsy's, and Lipsy's is just fantastic to work with because Jason and Dale and the whole crew at Lipsy's, man, they just. They're like boots on the ground, get it done, and they're good people, and they bring a lot of the special edition stuff that non-standard catalog stuff, and it's and we actually had them last year put some product from all of the different companies that sponsored the event into the pro shop at this the Clinton House there, so a lot of like over half of the guns they shipped. For sale went like locals bought them. A couple of people had them shipped to their home FFL. So
Oh, that's awesome.
yeah, it turned kind of turned into a little bit of a sales event as well. So but yeah, it was like I think they shipped like 36 guns and sold like 20 of them. So
That's not bad. I did that. I ran an event down with our friends down at Range Ready, the Gun Talk guys,
yeah.
and we sent a bunch of guns down for the which just as a fun aside, I love seeing all of these other brands do, you know, an experience down at Range Ready, because I did it first. Like, I'm not saying that they're all copying my idea, but they're copying my idea, and I'm totally fine with that because it's a really fucking good idea. So if you guys don't know what the experience.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
Thing is at Range Ready, but brands like Taurus, we did it a couple of years ago. Is we will do a class, and it's an open enrollment class. Anybody can sign up, but we, as tourists, we provided all of the guns, all of the ammo, and then at the end of it, one of the guns you got to keep, and then the other one you could buy at like a crazy, stupid discount, and it was a huge success. And other people saw that, and they're like, "This is a good idea. We should do this." I'm like, "Yeah, you should, because you are putting guns into the hands of your potential customers, and that's where you win, and it's where everybody wins. I mean, if your guns are, you know, shoot, if you put guns into people's hands and they don't go bang, then you have different problems."
We, Daryl and I did one with Ryan and Chris and KJ. We did a Colt Python experience, and that one, same model. You know, Galco provided holsters. I think like Federal had ammo there, and It was the most expensive class that they had ever done, because just based on the product, right?
I mean,
it's a premium grade product, and it sold out in like 10 minutes.
Oh yeah.
And people were like, "Oh, I get to keep the gun I went to school with." And, and Ryan and the, like, I love the Gresham family and just his whole crew of people down there. And man, like the lunch joint that we had, like they catered in lunch every day for the students.
Did they bring in the like the jambalaya and the, because they
had a local Mexican joint that was off the hook, and then the next day they did like chicken from that jambalaya joint.
Yeah,
and,
they brought in some Creole joint one day, and it was so good. And then the next day they brought in like a local barbecue joint, and I'm like, "Oh, I'm gonna get fat in 3 days out here." Like, I love I love going down to Louisiana in general, but my favorite thing about going to do stuff down with the Gun Talk guys is that little town that they're in, that small area, has some insanely good restaurants, and you would have no idea that it's there because it's clear on the other side of Lake Pontchartrain from New Orleans, right? Like, you go to New Orleans, you're like, "I'm in New Orleans," but then you get out of the town and you're over where the Gun Talk boys are, and there's some pretty good eating there.
Well, and I like the fact that Gun Talk is equidistant between Lipsy's and New Orleans.
Oh, there you go. I didn't know that.
So,
very useful.
So it's handy because you can either go over to New Orleans, you know, go to the, you know, Cafe du Monde or one of, you know, Dookie Chase or one of those legacy places, or you can call your buds at Lipsy's and go, "Hey, I'm in town. Where are we going?" So it's Ryan picked a good spot. It's a win-win.
He did. So he did pick a good spot for that. They have a nice facility too. I was out there years ago, filming one of their shows, First Person Defender. And, you know, one of the highlights of my career was I got to shoot KJ in the dick with a Sims gun. So just a 10 out of 10 career moment for me.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And their facility, every time I've been down there, it's a little better than it was the time before. So, and of course, Chris Serino. I mean, you can't help but love Chris, man.
No.
He's just great, Chris, great dude.
Chris is the best. I've known Chris for 17 years now, because we met at the auditions for Top Shot, which were in 2009.
Wow.
Like, yeah, we go back a ways. So I'm going to ask you the question that I always get asked when I do other people's podcasts. And that question boils down to some version of, "Okay, but why revolvers? It's 2026, right? Like, and I'm sure you've been asked that a million times. So again, I'm going to ask you, cause it's my show.
So why revolvers in 2026? Well, I've got like a 2 or 3 part answer to that. So I tend to be a little, like deep thinking about some of the stuff. And the one is they're cool and I like them. That's the Caleb Giddings answer. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. Two, I think they're a niche, but they're a niche that caters to everybody, from the really highly skilled to the entry level. There's something for you in there. And then the third one is like, you know, some of the legalities and some of the places that I've traveled, a revolver with like a wad cutter or a lead semi wad cutter, there's not a whole lot of places in the United States that's going to be a problem. So, if you're legal to carry there, or you're staying somewhere and you can have a gun on your at home, whatever, revolvers just tend to be less problematic, with the whole gun legislation thing. And which it's just a harsh reality of the times we live in, but that's kind of my three big ones, right?
No, I absolutely agree with that. And I think, one of the things that I sort of have, that I've been saying recently, and that in some ways I feel, I don't want to say I feel guilty about it because, and I was actually on Ryan's podcast talking about this, but one of the things that I've had to realize as I've gotten older in my career and more mature in my career is that no matter how much I want everybody to go get training and go, and I mean, I'm not even talking about like go to Rev Fest and get like really high quality training. I'm talking like go take a fucking gun safety class so not to put your finger on the trigger. But one of the conclusions that I have come to is that there are a certain number of people who are going to see something on the news or read something on Twitter, and it's going to make them feel unsafe about their life in some way, shape, or form. And so they're going to do the American thing, which is buy a gun. And they're not going to even take their basic gun safety class if they're not required to. And let's be real, most states these days have no, and I just want to be very clear before I get too far in this. I am opposed to state mandated training for gun ownership, 100% opposed to it. But I want people to voluntarily go and get it. But I recognize that there are a lot of people that are never ever going to do that. They're going to buy this gun. They are going to load it. They're going to buy this gun. They're going to get a box of holler points, or let me get a box of them holler points. No, they're not holler points. Okay, whatever. They're going to get a box of ammo from the gun store, and they're going to load it. And then they're going to put it in their nightstand drawer or sock drawer or on a shelf somewhere in their house. And that's going to be the only time they ever think about it. And so for me, the revolver then has two inherent advantages. Well, three inherent advantages in that scenario. In that,
you're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own podcast is free and easy. Upload an episode and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads just like this. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start your new podcast for free today at RSS.com.
At one, it's incredibly tolerant of neglect. Assuming you put good ammo in it and it sits for 10, 15 years on that shelf, the night that you need it, it's gonna go bang. It's gonna get those six rounds out of it. The second and third things, and the ones that are a little bit uncomfortable, but I think something you and I both realize is for these people who are not going to get training, who are not going to get any sort of gun safety, the revolver is very easy to load, unload, verify whether or not it's loaded, and finally, it's hard to negligently discharge. And that's and I like I hate saying that like the fact that it's hard to negligently discharge is a good selling point, but once you get to the point where you acknowledge that these people are out there, when they go to pick up a gun in the middle of the night, where their finger doesn't index high on the cylinder or on the ejection port like Craig teaches. No, it goes straight into the trigger guard because that's where it goes. It feels nice to put it there. So I would really prefer that if they're wandering around their house at 2 in the morning, half asleep, they've got their finger on a 12-pound DA trigger versus, a 3.5-pound striker fired gun.
And the other one I'm looking at is about 5 years ago, I kind of went on this discovery of, man, most of the gun owning populace ain't me. They're
No.
not me. you know, they're, I call it the my mom factor. They're my mom. They're my stepdad. My a gun to them has no real use other than it's just my, I keep it at home, or, you know, it's a hunting rifle that I take out once a year. And if you go to the big package stores, that's their gun buying shop, right? And so I went to an NRA course, the NRA instructor development for handguns, and everybody knocks it. And I sat back and went, if I was my mom, am I going to go, hey, I want you to go train with, you know, insert name here, nationally recognized instructor? Or do I feel okay with them giving her a book, a pamphlet that walks you through step by step how to load and unload a gun safely? And then your first trip to the range, you shoot from a sandbag, right? Seated. Like, and I went, this isn't as bad as everybody says it is. It's just, it is so like rudimentary that most of us in the super consumer category dismiss it as, you know, useless. And I saw that with cops too. The bulk of the gun toting cop populace are not gun people.
Oh no. Well, and I see, I mean, I teach, you know, I still, the best thing, and we, you and I've had this conversation, you know, privately, but the best thing that ever happened to me as a, to break me of, because I was, you know, very much that guy who was like, everyone should be carrying a Glock 19 with two spare mags and a weapon mounted light. And, you know, and that was, that's your minimum loadout, right? Which is retarded when you really think about it. Like, but it's a different story. But what really broke me of that was having to do institutionalized classes and teach military members. And, you know, even in, like, I get it, you know, for us, for the military, the Air Force especially, right? Like, yeah, I'll get like nurses and people who are never going to touch a gun, but they got a qual because that's the rules, right? I don't care about their attitude. They can be, you know, whatever. But it's when I would get the people with jobs that actually required them to carry guns as part of the job, and that job also included the chance that they may have to use that gun, and then they're at their qual or they're at their, you know, quarterly fam training or something like that, and they just don't want to fucking be there. And I'm like, this is your job. Like, this isn't the everyday part of your job, but if you're doing your job and this is part of it that you have to do, it's really fucking important that you do it right. And we're not even asking you for that much. I'm asking you for 4 hours. Come on. Oh, yeah. So when I realized that people who are getting paid to shoot guns and carry guns don't care about training sometimes, that was what broke my mind of that, like, everyone has to go get training. Like, damn, yes, I would love for everyone to go get training, but it just, it's not going to happen. Like, people,
not the reality.
Yeah.
And even amongst cops, man, like some of the instructors I worked around, as I got older in the instructor deal, I would do, like, if we were just sitting around and people were, you know, talking about guns, I'm like, okay, you're an instructor, you're the expert, and we have like 38 approved guns. And I'd go just like randomly grab a sample out of our vault and set them on the bench and be like, well, tell me how this one works. And you just see these blank stares. And the one I remember really specifically was the, do you remember the Smith & Wesson SW99 DASA striker fired gun that had the B-cocker on the top?
Yeah.
That one for a while was approved at our agency, and it had paddle mag releases way ahead of its time. And maybe not the best execution for the era, but I'd set that one down on the bench and be like, show me how to run this gun. You
what
know,
was
or
it?
A, USPs.
Wasn't the SW99, it was because there was some sort of deal with Smith and Walther at the time. Like, it was a Walther P99 with a couple of extra gigas to get it into the US market, if memory serves me.
Yeah, and from what I understand, it was like, it was kind of a collab, and then but the big one, it had this big rectangular button on the top of the slide, and that actually released the striker.
Yeah.
And then you had a double action first shot striker fired gun, and then your subsequent shots were a single action.
Do you know and who else ripped that off? Do you remember the OG Canix? Because they were a copy of that gun, basically. Is the original Canix, when they came in, were basically just, you know, P99s with that Smith style decocker on it. They got rid of that feature real quick. They were like, oh, no one wants this. Let's launch this into the sun.
Well, that, and, you know, as I go back through time and history and all that, you know, like the HK guys, we had this little like guild of HK fans on the PD, as every police department has them.
Of course.
Every major, it's like they're out hunting obscure handguards and flash hiders
every
and crap, right?
every Air Force unit, every cop squadron I've been in, there's like three guys who are like, no, like, you know, we should really be carrying, we should have HKs. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, well, I would, these guys would go total fanboy, and I'd set down like three USPs that all three looked cosmetically identical and operated differently. So some would have a decocker, some were DASA, some were, you know, LEM, some were LEM with a thumb safety. And I'd be like, all right, show me what you got. You're the expert. And half of those guys were like, well, I've never seen this configuration. And I'm like, to me, there's like, if you're going to be an instructor, and this is one of my pet peeves, is you need to study not just the instructional side, but the gun side, like you're trying to get a doctorate degree in engineering or something. And there's not a lot of those people out there.
No. And, you know, because you think about, like, you know, if you're teaching a class, an open enrollment class, you're, you know, most of your students in this day and age are going to show up with some flavor of polymer framed striker fired 9mm, right? And then you're going to get, you know, the Gyarados who show up with 2011s, which may or may not work. And this is no shade to any 2011 manufacturer, right? But like, that's the best thing you can say about a 2011 is it may or it may not work. All right. And if it works, great. That's fantastic. You know, and if it doesn't work, well, then I hope you know how to fix it, or you know somebody who's really good at it, because it's a lot more complicated to get it working than it is to get your striker fired. In some ways, like, semi-controversial opinion, I think the dominance and prevalence of striker fire, semi-automatic striker fired guns have led to an overall dumbing down of high level shooters, right? So, like, to explain, it used to be like, I'll use Brian Enos as an example, right? Like, back in the day when Brian was, you know, shooting Bianchi Cup and doing all of that, he also knew how to work on all of his guns, right? You know, he could go in and retime a Smith & Wesson revolver and do all of the things that he needed to do. And we have now gotten to a point where you can be an extremely high-level shooter and you can be perfectly capable of pulling the Legos out of your Glock and putting new Legos in to replace the broken ones. But that's it. If you're asked to perform a more complex operation on, like on a 1911 or on a 2011 or a DASA gun, you're like, I don't know what to do with my hands. And it's because we democratized, we made it really easy. I said that word wrong. We made it really easy to get good, reliable guns that you can shoot the hell out of and go train with them and get really good at shooting and not know anything about how the gun actually works, right? You know, and I get it. There's race car drivers out there who don't know who have no idea how their car works. They just get in and they pilot their spaceship around and that's it. But to me, half of the fun of doing what we do is understanding the technology of how it works, understanding, you know, why there's a little man wearing a monocle on a bicycle inside my Smith & Wesson revolver when I take the side plate off.
Yeah. And there's some, like you said, when the Tupperware, tactical Tupperware came around, and it is the prolific 21st century sidearm, we really lost a ton of knowledge for convenience, and that's okay. And I think it's really cool to see companies offering affordable 2011s and 1911s now that actually work, where 10 years ago that was not the norm. And like, I'll throw a shout to Taurus. When I was on Matt Little's podcast, he said, dude, I picked up a 9mm government model Taurus and it works. And 9mm in a government model platform is the absolute most
Oh,
crutched together and difficult
it
gun to make
works.
run.
I'm gonna call out Matt a little bit. It works right until Matt overinserts a magazine all the way past the slide stop in there, like with his giant orangutan hands trying to do a speed read, like
Breaks the ejector off or something.
just smashed it through the gut. I was like, Christ almighty, dude, could you maybe try to, I don't know, do an in-battery reload or something? He's strong though, so
Yeah.
but no, that's the crazy thing too. Like, you know, the fact that we have that, we made that gun and it works. And you know, this is because when he was like, you know, because I sent him those guns and I'm fully, you know, sitting at my desk, you know, prepared to be like, all right, well, change this part. Can you do this? Like, da 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 da. And he texts me a couple of weeks later and he's like, oh, the guns run great. And I'm like, nine
Okay.
mil? 1911s run great? I had years ago, I had a Nighthawk 9mm 1911 that I could not get to run for shit. And I tried everything. I changed spring weights. I changed the extractor. Like, I did everything you can imagine to get that gun to work. And it was just like, eh. And finally, I found out that it would run if you fed it federal. The only thing that it would reliably feed was federal 147 grain ammo, because it would reliably feed, it'd feed most stuff. I should say that, but it wouldn't cycle most stuff. Like, most you'd press the trigger and you would get, like, when I tell you anemic ejection, right? Like, these rounds would like dribble out of the ejection port if they cleared it. And the only thing that it would reliably actually get out of the gun were those federal 147s. And I'm like, that's useless to me. I have 10,000 rounds of 124 grain federal in my house. But yeah, no. And I remember that because at the time, and this is to, you know, give some flowers to another manufacturer of affordable 1911s, I had one of the Rock Island 9mm 1911s. And I mean, it rattled when you shook it. The finish wasn't very nice, and it went through 5,000 rounds like a champ. And I'm like, what? What the hell? How did this guy? Why is this gun so good?
I built a 6-inch 1911 with a full Aristocrat rib. It's sitting over there in my safe. And that gun, I can take somebody through building a 45 ACP. Like I can set them at a bench next to me and I can show you how to mechanically get the gun together and then hand you emery cloth and sanding sticks and go, it's your job to make it look pretty, right? And that's how I learned, right? Well, you can, it is so simple now to put together a semi-custom 45 ACP and say, there are companies that sell kits that, like, if the barrel or the slide dimensions are close, like you whittle a little on the hood and clink, they go into battery and you're done. And you don't even have to finish ream the chamber half the time. Well, you do that, you use the correct spring formula and a good magazine, and it's hard to make a 45 not run. A 9mm, on the other hand,
It's hard to get him to run.
it's exp.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.
Every layer, you change one thing, you just change six things in the operation. And I figured out from Nowlin Manufacturing back in the day, there was a gunsmith named Terry Bowler. Terry's still kind of around. He builds race airplanes now, of all things.
Sounds
But
more fun than guns, honestly.
probably a lot more money in it. But but Terry, I went. Nowlin was about 2 hours from my house, so I went up there five or six times. And he showed me how he was getting 9mm 1911s to work. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that's the. And It had to do with two recoil spring plugs stacked on top of each other and a commander length recoil spring. So I'll let the audience figure that one out.
Yeah,
but
I'm trying to picture that in my head, and I'm not getting much. Well, and I will say, commander length 1911s are easier to get to work right than the full size ones. And I actually, as a shooter, I prefer commander length in 9mm because I feel like all of that slide mass on the 9mm, the gun recoils pillowy. Like the recoil's weird, for lack of a better word. It's very soft, very easy to shoot, but it almost feels slow compared to when you shoot a commander and the slide snaps, goes, comes back, goes forward, gun's ready to go again. But that's just me, personal preference. Some people like really pillowy recoil, I guess.
Yeah, the 6-inch gun I built, the gun weighs about 4.5 pounds, and it's got an old STI Target Master frame, so a real long dust cover square frame, and it's got a non-radiused Caspian slide on it. And that gun, the slide goes ka-chunk, ka-chunk, and the gun is for shooting barricade off of barricades. And you can physically see the gun recoil, but it runs. And but either way, the whole thing was you put a full-length guide rod in it, and you put a short commander spring in it. You put a full-length government spring plug or two commander spring plugs, and you stack them on top of each other and put that in the gun. And what that did was it acted as a spacer, so you have a commander length recoil system on a government length gun. And who else did that recently in the polymer striker fired space that killed off a legacy gun and changed all the recoil systems to the Glock 19 length recoil system? Funny how that all came back around, right? If you think about it.
Yeah, no, that is, yeah, they're like, hey, well, let's just do this. We'll just do Glock 19 system. Interesting. I didn't think about that. Speaking of Heller head guns, you're talking about recoil, and I have been messing. So we have the, over at Taurus, we make the 327 Defender Toro, which is the 3-inch small frame, 6-shot 327 Fed Mag. I can tell you, I have two of them. I've shot maybe two cylinders full of 327 Fed Mag, which in my opinion is an even dumber cartridge than 357 Mag, but that's a different story. But I was shooting them, and I was doing Gabe White's drills, and you know, one of them is a 4 to the body, 2 to the head. And I had 32 longs in the gun, and my transition from the body to the head is just as fast as my split, because the dot doesn't even leave the dot, barely moves in the window, much less leaves the window. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what the terminal ballistics on 32 long is, but I can shoot this gun really, really fast and shoot it really, really accurately at the same time. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, maybe those old timey guys knew what they were fucking doing with some of this stuff.
Well, there is likely graveyards full of people from the 20s that befell to the 32 long. So it's not to be dismissed. And 32 H&R Magnum.
Oh, now there's.
Yeah, and to me, it's not a Magnum cartridge to me.
No.
Because if you look at it on the pressure, SAMI pressure scale, it's really close to like 38 special standard. You know, you can get some increased pressures with jacketed bullets and things like that. And then you go from that to 327, which is a rifle cartridge pretending to be a revolver cartridge. However, in a long barrel single action revolver, 327 comes to life.
Oh, I could see that. Like one of those, what did Ruger make? They made a single seven. Yeah, 7-shot with, and you could only get it with like a 7.5-inch barrel and stuff like that. Hypothetically, well, you know, I was going to try to tease a product launch that we've got coming up. It's not a 327, guys, but it, there's literally nothing I can say that right now that wouldn't give it away. But those single sevens were cool, and I was looking at Henry used Henry 327 Fed Mag carbines, and I'm like, I bet you one of these would just like, especially here in the Atlantic Southeast region, our deer are small. Okay, we don't have really big. I don't have like big Indiana white-tailed deer that are, you know, just eating corn all day. I'm like, dude, 327 Fed Mag would slap the piss out of some whitetail down here.
So Chauncey, he and his wife both, Chauncey ended up with a USFA Sparrowhawk that used to belong to John Taffin.
That's
And that
crazy.
is a weird gun because it's an 8 shot that you can only safely load 7 in. So, but all that to say, he went out like 2 days after he bought it, and I've held that gun, and it is a tank. It's like just this gigantic, completely niche gun with a 7.5 inch barrel, and it launches 100 grain bullets at bordering on 2,000 feet per second.
I mean, like 327 and 357 mag are rifle rounds. Like, because, and we've talked about the 357 as a rifle round before, but people don't realize that you pop that thing into a 16 inch barrel and you're getting 30 carbine velocities. You know, you're like, it turns it into basically a 35 caliber carbine. And I was shooting, what did I shoot? I was shooting the Federal Fusion, the 158 grain jacketed soft point, and I'm getting 1800 feet per second out of this round, and it's shooting nice little groups, and I'm like, this is awesome. Like, you could really wreck somebody's day with this thing.
The only 357 mag ammo that I hand load for is I've got an older Marlin carbine, and my hand load will shoot 1.25 inches at 100 yards with 180 grain Hornady XTP doing 1900 feet per second.
That's
That's and our buddy from DSM, Mike Lessman, you've met him at 100 events, he used to hunt with a Marlin Trapper in 357, and he shot 170 grain gas checked hard cast, and he's anchored, I think, between him, his son, and their hunting buddy, they anchored like 96 animals with that, and the closest shot was about 86 yards. The impressive one was his pal had a 2-power scout scope and anchored an antelope on the run at 400 yards and rolled it, didn't have to chase it. With a
That's
350,
wild.
with that little puny pistol cartridge, and I think, in gun space, a lot of that stuff, if we go back in history, if we study history, to get the velocities out of 357 Magnum that they were getting with the 38-44 loading, they made them unsafe for medium frames,
Yeah, they
but
just
you could do
jam
that
them full
more.
of powder.
Yeah, but you could do it more efficiently in that shorter case. You just didn't want that shorter case going into a 1905 pre-heat treated 38.
I mean,
So,
to this day, people still blow up those old guns because they're just like, do, 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 do. I'm going to throw a 38 special. I'm going to throw a shout out to Buffalo Boar's 38, you know, quote unquote. That, because a Buffalo Boar, if you makes a 38 special plus P outdoorsman's load, guys. I've chronographed it. It is not a 38. It is a 357 Magnum in a 38 case. It is 158 grain hard cast gas check bullet going Mach buck. Like, I would not. It's, I mean, if you want to shoot through, you know, I shot it into a 24 inch block of ballistics gel and I didn't recover the bullet. Like, it was no idea where it went. So if you want a 38 that really, really, really penetrates, get that. But at that point, and I will say this, you're actually just better off getting one of the getting a 357. And I think that there's some really interesting loads out there from Federal right now. They have two that I'm really interested in. One is the Fusion load, which is, you know, it's basically a nicer version of their bulk jacketed soft point. And then they have a what they call their dangerous game load, which not don't not African dangerous game people, but like mountain lions and bears and shit in North America. And it's a 180 grain hard cast gas check bullet that when I shot it out of my rifle was pushing 1900 feet per second. And I'm like, that is going to go the long way through anything that walks on four legs in North America. Like, just straight in one end and out the other.
Yeah. And I do a lot of, I just cast a bunch of 41 mag the other day, 41 bullets for 41 Magnum. And all of my hunting handguns, I don't run gas checks because I have found if I push the velocities up to where the bullet needs a gas check, it just hurts me in the gun. It doesn't, we don't get any more out of it. And so I reserve the gas check round for like 4570 and some of those, but I bought hard cast ingot and some molds. And, because I love 41 Magnum is my favorite Magnum. And to me, it is probably the most efficient Magnum. When we talk about case capacity and cross-sectional density, and you put those two things into a 40 410 or a 401, like 10 millimeter, it really, with heavier bullets, it really outperforms a lot of the bigger diameter cartridges. You know, you take a 225 41 Magnum in a 4-inch barrel, and you put a 225 44 Magnum in a 4-inch equivalent gun, the 41 will shoot softer and use less powder.
Interesting.
To get the same velocity, because you have an efficient burn. The bullet is like two times longer than it is big around, so it jumps the chamber into the forcing cone and gas seals into the rifling before it's out of the case.
Ah,
so now you're not losing all that potential energy through the flash gap.
Well, because I mean, that's, you know, 44 Magnum is my favorite big bore cartridge, without a
doubt. It's the easy button.
Yeah, it is. Like, you know, as much as I love 460, also 460 is a rifle round. And for people who don't believe me, go find a 460 somewhere. But specifically, go grab a 460. Federal makes it. It's 275 grain solid copper hollow point from Barnes. Grab that and put it next to the 225 grain Bushmaster 450 Bushmaster solid copper hollow point, and you'll be like, this is the same fucking bullet. I'm like, the 225 is a little lighter, but it's like the rounds are the same. 460 Magnum is a rifle round, full stop, which, as an aside, I wish somebody made rifles for it, because I feel like it would be like, you know, I mean, you remember the glory days, the H&R Handy rifle, and they just chambered it in whatever thing they wanted. And they had a 500 Magnum one, which was almost as unpleasant to shoot as a 500 Magnum handgun.
They made one prototype in 460 that I'm aware of, and I watched it break. Now that they're out of business, and I'm not going to be talking bad about them. I thought they were cool rifles, but the advertising company that was handling their media accounts brought it out to our gun range, and the rep was like, "Hey, do you want to shoot the first 460 XVR handy rifle?" And I was like, "That's
a pass."
No, I was like, "That's actually a cool setup for that cartridge." And I fired one, I opened the breech and the gun fell apart. And I was like, I looked down and the actual pin that it pivots on had fractured. And I don't mean like the bolt head broke off of it.
I mean,
it split down the middle. And I was like, here you go. And that cartridge to me, that was just proof that I guess the drugs were better in the early 2000s or something.
No kid. Well, like, people don't understand 460 mag. And we talked about this on a primary and secondary podcast ages ago. 460 mag is the actual most powerful production handgun round. It operates at a higher chamber pressure, pushes harder velocities than 500 mag. And we said at the time, you know, people buy a 500 to get a 500. People buy a 460 when they want to do serious, dangerous game killing with a Magnum handgun. But even having said all of that, if you said, Caleb, you got to go hunt in North America and you can only pick one revolver caliber to hunt with, I'm taking a 44 mag. I mean, hell, I took a 44 mag to Africa, right? Like, I'm just taking that gun. Like, would I want to hunt a Cape Buffalo with it? No, that would not be my first choice. But do I think that a Cape Buffalo would necessarily shrug off 6 rounds of, hard caster in a 50 grain 44 mag? Probably not either. So, now I'm, having said that, the people in the comments will be like, you'd never shoot a Cape Buffalo with a 44 Magnum. It's not powerful enough. And I'm like, I bet you they killed these things with black powder muzzle loaders, guys. Okay. Yes, they're tough, but they're not indestructible.
And I'm a big fan of like Dick Thompson's writing, and he carried water for 41 Magnum and 44 a lot, just in the handgun hunting realm. And I look back, buffalo hunters, you go read some of what they talked about, and there's several of them that wrote little snippets, in what the 1800s equivalent of like Outdoor Life magazine or whatever. These guys would just write a story about a buffalo hunt. Half of these dudes were shooting soft lead at 1200 feet per second to 1400 feet per second in a big gigantic rifle, and they would recover the bullet, and then that night around the campfire, while they're skinners are going cleaning buffalo, they're casting that same piece of lead again to put together another cartridge and adding a little bit of lead to it to make up for whatever was lost. And bison buffalo and Cape buffalo, I don't know enough about the physical characteristics of the two, but they were shooting end to end through these with what amounts to a 50 caliber football. And
Well, hell, if you go read for people out there who are interested in like the Africa stuff, go read A Hunter's Wanderings in Africa by Frederick Courtney Sellos, right? Like he's killing elephants with a 75 cal muzzle loader. Elephants, right? Like, and is he, I, and I forget, and I think one he mentions the grain weight, and he of course does it in grams, so it doesn't make any fucking sense. And I did the conversion, and it's like a 500 grain bullet. So I'm doing this in my head. I'm like, given black powder, like a 500 grain 75 cal bullet, yeah, I mean, you could probably throw a baseball harder than that thing's going. It's I like he's probably got that like ambitiously at 1200 feet per second. So, and I'm not, and again, I also understand why there is such a mystique around Cape Buffalo and how hard to kill they are. It's called marketing. Okay, because if you look, we're trying these people, and God bless them for it, these guys are trying to sell hunts, and it makes the hunt more potentially interesting and exciting if you sell this animal as dangerous. And it is dangerous, and it is hard to kill, but it's not indestructible. Like you could probably kill them with, and I think part of it too is, would I trust my marksmanship ability to do a bill drill on a Cape Buffalo? Yes. But to go back to that guy, Bob the dentist who's bought his safari rifle and he's going to Africa because he wants to do a hunt, can he bill drill a Cape Buffalo? Probably not. These are two different people here.
And that's one of the things I really love with single action guns,
Ugh.
is especially handgun, because I spent all last year handgun hunting with a single action, and I plan to do it for the next 3 or 4 years. Unless one of those 350 Legend Tauruses show up, then I might have to make an exception on that. But but Shane John and I talk quite a bit on hunting, and one, the guy is a fantastic handgun shooter. Like, he
Shane can
is
shoot.
disturbingly accurate. And it's just funny because I thought I knew all the hardcore accuracy dudes. Well, he wasn't out posting scores on a PPC range. He was out posting Boone and Crockett's on his wall, right? Like, and we both kind of like, for years, handgun hunting and talking different stuff. And it's like, hard cast lead at a moderate velocity will go through just about anything. And
What was I said earlier? It's almost like those old guys that figured a lot of shit out. Like
almost like they knew it.
shoot them with big, heavy bullets at moderate velocities in places where it counts, and things tend to flop over dead pretty quick. Huh.
And
God, I'm
that
turning into
was,
such a fucking boomer.
yeah, you and me both, man. And the guy that got me into casting, I was over there casting the other day, and he's looking at my bullets and going, yeah, turn the casting pot up. That lead mixture needs a little more heat. Get the mold closer to the drop. And I'm like, wow, you know, that is a lifetime of knowledge right there. And I said, what got you into this? And he goes, do you know how much it costs to buy 550 grain 45 bullets? I'm like, no. And he goes, it's a lot.
I imagine those would be really hard to buy. It's just to find them. Like, I've never even heard of that grain weight in a 45. Of course, now you've got me like, I want to get my, I wish, I got to figure out a way to petition Brazil for us to do a deputy with adjustable sights. Like, it's not that hard. Like, put an adjustable sight in there. Because we have, you know, we've got it. And also, yes, before anyone asks me, I know that you all want us to do a 44 special deputy. I have asked for it. It's never going to happen because sales numbers are a real thing. All right. Like, if you're making single action revolvers, the vast majority of them that get sold are 357s and 45s. We make the 357 and the 45 guys. But that being said, I did shoot my five. I got a 5.5-inch deputy or single action, and I shot it. And I've got you know, a bunch of like random Remington 230 grain jacketed hollow point ammo laying around, and it shoots right over the tip of the front sight. And I'm like at 25 yards, and I'm like, I could handgun hunt with this. Like, I would have to be really careful about shot placement and shot opportunities. But, you know, I think we're so spoiled to in the year of our Lord 2026, right? Like, everything's got, you know, we're so used to optics and good iron sights now that we forget that we exterminated the buffalo with iron sights. You know?
Yeah.
Like, everything that was killed with a handgun before, like, 19, I don't know, whenever the first aim point came out, whenever that was, basically everything that was killed with a handgun before then was killed with iron sights.
Well, and this is one to wrap your head around. I had my buddy, same casting buddy, my dad's FFL business partner. He picks up a vintage Buffalo rifle, like, I don't know, Sharps or something. It could have been a Schneider. I don't know. That is even too propeller headed for me, but he starts loading for it. And this gun shoots high. I mean, high. And so he starts doing some research, and he calls this old man that lived in like Idaho. And he's like, hey, can you build me a front sight for this? He says, before you do that, do you have a Buffalo silhouette? And he goes, yeah. He said, go drive it out to 500 yards and hold the front sight at the bottom of the intersection of the front leg and the front leg and like where the belly comes.
Right.
You know, that transition.
Where you would have a clear visual aiming reference.
There you go. So we do this, and that round with that, whatever that 425 grain load at 1200 parks right in the vitals right when you put the sights there. And I go, almost like we overthink things so, you know, meticulously that we overlook practicality a lot of times.
Right.
And I had an old silhouette shooter tell me, yeah, I used to sight my rifle for a 6 o'clock hold on a B, like the B8 repair center, what B9s, whatever they were shooting, because that was a one known reference. If I tried to hold it in the center of the X ring, you know, I had no reference. But if I lollipopped it on top of that, I could dial my sights to lollipop it at any distance. And I'm
when
like,
I do the same thing with my if I'm shooting iron sighted gun at Bianchi Cup, I zero it so that at 25 yards, if I hold, because the X ring on the Bianchi target is black, the rest of the target's tan. If I hold 6 o'clock on the X ring and, you know, obviously do the trigger pulling part correctly, then the bullet goes in the middle of the X ring because I have a visual contrast and aiming point right there. And like, you tell somebody in, you know, today's day and age that you've set a gun up for a 6 o'clock hold, and before you can even get to the eminently reasonable thought process that led you to that, they're like, oh no, you got to do point of aim, point of impact for everything. And I'm like, but I'm not shooting USPSA with this gun. I'm shooting a completely different game with a completely different objective.
Well, and the other thing I figured out from a lot of studying some of the Buffalo rifle stuff and casting stuff is the sights back then were made by hand, like with a file and a rasp. So they couldn't make a 0.110 front sight or, you know, 110 or a 105 or a 100. So if you had a front sight you could see at the end of the 30-inch barrel, that would cover an entire buffalo beyond 500, 600 yards. So they're like, how do we do this? Oh, we sight them in where they shoot. And it worked. And, you know, it's, and we've even got some like examples of rudimentary optics back then. And 1.5 power is, you know, a 3.5 foot long optic. They work. It's crazy. And we live in a golden age where I can get on Optics Planet or Midway or Brownells or, you know, any number of the websites, and I can go, I want these rings, I want this scope, I want this light, I want this optic, I want this. And 3 to 5 days later, they show up. And, you know, and it wasn't even like that in the 90s, you know, in the 80s and 90s. You had to like go to the store or go to an outfitter or something, or get the, you know, the Shotgun News catalog and hope you read the compatibility right, you know, or whatever. Now, you know, well, I remember when Vortex came out and I was like, what do you mean you get a target turret scope for $400? Are you out of your mind? Like, so we live in this golden era, and it's like you said, we've given up some of our knowledge for convenience. And that's one of the things that I really enjoy doing, especially with marketing companies and like gun companies, is going, hey, do you remember this? Do you remember why it didn't work? You know, here's the lineage of this. And, and these bring secondary market prices like this because you didn't do it that many times. Cause you know, so
that's why that's such been a crazy market for used Taurus curves right now.
Weird.
there is not, unless your name is Ron Dan, in which case he buys everyone that he sees. But yeah, you know, it's interesting. And, you know, kind of to how like, one of the things that, and we'll wrap up after this, but one of the things that you and I connected on when we first met was that, you know, in a lot of the spaces that we occupy, we're the relatively young guys, and we're in some ways tasked with preserving this institutional knowledge that is dying out in many ways, because the guys that had it before us didn't have YouTube channels. They didn't do podcasts. You know, they didn't, you know, when it's like, when you're talking about this Buffalo rifle thing, I was like, why would that gun shoot high? And then the minute that you said, put the front sight right there, I was like, they sighted that gun in for what would be their most probable shot scenario so that they could park rounds without having to think about holdover, this, that, or the other thing. And I'm like, that is pretty clever. But Brian, before I let you go, where can the people find you? Where can they go to sign up for RevFest and all this other fun stuff?
So you got AmericanFightingRevolver.com or RevolverFest.com. That's the two landing pages. It's at AFR official on all the socials. If you listen to Gun Day Brunch, you've probably seen a post of ours on Instagram.
Real good chance that our audiences have really strong crossover.
Yeah. But yeah, AmericanFightingRevolver.com is the main landing page, and the shop link there. We sell product there. We sell holsters and things like that for some different guns. And it is a paywall website, so a lot of the articles and video articles are behind the wall. But if you don't want to kick the $5 a month to pay for it, there's free articles on there as well. So you can go over to the categories and public articles, and there it is. And we, you know, we publish a video every Wheel Gun Wednesday, and I'm getting ready to publish a series that we just did with Tyler Gunworks and some cool guns from them. So, but yeah, that's where you find us. And let's see what else. Yeah, that's, I mean, my old off-duty, on-duty podcast is still floating around out there in cyberspace. That's a good listen.
There's some good episodes out there, guys. You should check those out. Had some good I used to listen to it. Had some good stuff. Well, Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to seeing you at Revolver Fest this year. And guys, if you didn't know, it's on Columbus Day weekend, which is the perfect weekend to have it because that's a bullcrap holiday that no one celebrates. So you just get a free day off to go shoot guns. All right. So come out to Clinton House, South Carolina for that. Again, Brian, thank you so much. And we will talk to you again soon.
Yes.